As Michael just introduced to us, he said, so what? I have received grace, now what? I'm living in God's grace, so what? St. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15:10 and says, but by the grace of God I am what I am, and His grace toward me was not in vain, but I labored more abundantly than they all. Yet not I, but the grace of God which was in me. I labored more abundantly than they all. Receiving grace or living in God's grace is not a passive action. It's not that I'm going to receive it and then just live my life according to my own will. But I have an obligation towards others to help them also to receive God's grace. I would like to talk to you tonight about receiving or living God's grace in a broken world. And just a little exercise to get your minds thinking a little bit. We're going to put up the first slide. And I don't want you to talk to each other, please. Okay, I'm going to laugh at you later because I'm going to trick you a little bit. It's called Find the F's Activity. I'm going to read this paragraph for you. And then all you have to do is count how many letter F's you find in this passage. Okay? Fairness is the final result of years of effective effort combined with the experience of diversity. Now, before I came, I asked and I checked. And I think they told me all of you are professionals in what you do. You're university or college graduates. You're professional. Many of you have graduated from, you know, big name schools. So this is just a simple mathematics exercise. Just all you do is count how many F's, not including the title. So don't count Find the F's Activity. Starting from fairness, just in your mind, count how many F's there are on the screen in front of you. Nothing yet. No, don't say out any numbers, please. Don't say any numbers. Just keep it to yourself. Count it one more time. Don't yell out, don't talk. Are you done? Okay, how many think there are four F's up there? No, just put up your hand, please. How many think there are five F's? How many think there are six F's? Okay, some people here think that there are six F's. How many think there are seven F's? Okay, just a few here and there. How many think there are eight F's? Okay, some here, some there. How many think there are nine F's? Come on, guys, I thought you were professional in what you did. This is a very simple mathematics question. Can you count like to a maximum of 10 at least? Some people thought there are 6 F's, 7 F's, 8 F's, and 9 F's. Okay, I'm going to give you another chance. Another chance. Don't scream out any numbers. Just count how many F's there are there on the board. Ready? Please don't speak to anyone beside you. How many still think that there are six F's? Six F's? Nobody. Okay, so just two people think they are against the world, like Saint Athanasius. Okay, so two people think there are still six F's. How many think there are seven F's? One. Now, why do you think it is built in our mind, or that we overlooked the of's, at least those who thought that there are six F's? They saw the fairness, the final, it's a big word, effective is a big word, and so on. Effort is a big word. But of, they missed it. It was right in front of their eyes. Did we change anything up here on the board? It is right in front of you, but we did not realize it. We did not see it. Because possibly it's a small word. Possibly it is pronounced differently. But at any rate, it is different than the rest of the sentence. Now I will start my presentation, please. Social justice, living God's grace in a broken world. Now, why do we need to speak about social justice? Isn't that like a cultural topic that just only is spoken in universities or colleges, other places? No, actually it is a very biblical subject that we all need to realize and talk about. Bringing God's grace to people. There are approximately 6.1 billion people living in the world, in our world today. The richest 20% have access or income. That is about 82.7% of the world's income. This is the top 20%. The poorest 20% only have access, or their income may total only 1.4% of the world's total income. I want you to go back with me a little bit to first century Judea. There were some people there who were the decision makers, the people who made all the choices. They were in control. These people would fit right at the center of this circle. If we'll say that this is the religious power and authority at the first century Judea. Who do you think would go right at the center of the decision making, the authority? Who were the people who could be a little bit off the center? Who would be right at the margin of the center? And who would actually go outside the center, outside the whole circle? The marginalized people. Who do you think was right at the center of the religious authority and power? Who was the big cheese? We have the scribes, the Pharisees, but even above them, there were the chief priest, the high priest, the Sanhedrin. These were like right at the center of the circle. Then a little bit of the circle, we may find the Pharisees, the scribes, the Sadducees. Little bit away towards the margin, but still inside the circle, we may find the everyday life Jewish person. Who do you think was right outside the circle? Who were the marginalized people, the disenfranchised, those who were, you know, thought of as impure? The Gentiles, yes. The lepers. The Samaritans, yes. The Samaritans were maybe right at the margins because they were like half-breeds. They were like cousins of the Jewish people. But yes, they were not regarded as highly as a regular Jewish person. Who else? Huh? The poor, thank you. Who else? Tax collectors, yes. They were like Roman agents. The blind, the deaf. All of these people were outside the circle. They didn't even fit inside the circle. And here is the hard question. Where do you think our Lord Jesus fits? If we were to put him somewhere, not according to our own faith today, but according to first century Judean culture, where do you think he would fit? How many of you say that he is right at the center? How many say that he is towards the margin but still inside? How many say that he is outside the circle altogether? I believe so. And it's not, of course, some of the decision makers, they pushed him out, but it was his own free will that he wanted to fit outside the circle. Look at an example, what happened with the disciples of John when they came to our Lord Jesus. An example in Matthew chapter 10. I apologize, Matthew 11. John the Baptist sent some messengers to the Lord and they were telling him, who are we waiting for, another, or are you the one? And listen, who were the Lord's homies here? Who were his crew? Huh? He said, go and tell John the things which you hear and see. The blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he who is not offended because of me. But Lord, why would we be offended because of you? He said, because these are my own people. I have brought the gospel to the poor, to the marginalized, those who are unwanted. Somebody mentioned the lepers being outcasts. During first century, the lepers had to live outside the city. They were not considered by any as even human beings. They were marked as unclean. And they had to wear special clothes to mark them. And if they walked down the road and they saw somebody coming the opposite way, they have to scream and say, unclean, unclean. And possibly leave the road until that person would pass by, and then they would come back on the road and continue their journey. They had no dignity whatsoever. They were not considered as human beings. But if we look at Mark chapter 1, the Lord, of course we know that no one was allowed to touch them, because if they had touched them, they themselves would become unclean. But the Lord did something in Mark chapter 1 verse 40, which was unheard of, unrealistic, or in today's terminology, people would say that was sick, man. Like, means sick in a good way. Not sick as in... I don't know if you guys are familiar with the lingo and stuff, but I thought... Okay. Touching a sick man back then was really cool. Well, uncool. But the Lord, by touching a leper, he made something which is out of people's minds. Look at what happened. Now a leper came to him, imploring him, kneeling down to him, and saying to him, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Then Jesus, moved with compassion, stretched out his hand and touched him, and said to him, I am willing, be cleansed. As soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy left him, and he was cleansed. The Lord touched him. Why did he touch him? Because he loved him. He cared for him. And he treated him as a human being who is created on God's image. This is social justice. Caring and loving those who are underprivileged. There are so many other examples we can read from Psalm 9. God remembers those who suffer. He does not forget their cry. The needy will not always be neglected. The hope of the poor will not be crushed forever. There are many examples that we can give. Also, the dead girl and the sick woman. One of the people that are also marginalized were the women at that time. And a woman who came to the Lord and touched him as she was bleeding. And he felt certain power go out of him, and he stopped the whole crowd. And he recognized that she has just been healed. This was an act of mercy and an act of compassion. There are many stories who are told to us by the church fathers that speak about poverty and compassion. And I just like to quote only three of these stories for Ava Theodore, Ama Senislitica, and Ava Arsenius. Ava Theodore, surnamed Fermi, had three good books. He went to Ava Macarius and he said to him, I have three good books, and I am helped by reading them. Other monks also want to read them, and they are helped by them. Tell me what to do. The old man said, reading books is good, but possessing nothing is more than all. When he heard this, he went away and sold the books and gave the money to the poor. Someone asked Amma Sinislitika of blessed memory, when Ava Macarius was in Egypt, he found a man who was stealing his possessions. He went up to the thief as though he were a traveler who did not live there and helped him to load the possessions and led him on his way in peace, saying to himself, "We brought nothing into this world, but the Lord gave as he willed, so it is done. Blessed be the Lord in all things." Also, once Ava Arsenius fell ill in Scetus, and in this state he needed just one coin. He could not find one, so he accepted one as a gift from someone else. And he said, "I thank you, God, that for your name's sake you have made me worthy to come to this pass that I should have to beg." Many of our fathers lived poverty by their own choice, but even when they could not or did not have anything, they could help out other people who are less fortunate by having the little bit given to them or donated to them. The Nativity fast is coming up, and there is a very important passage in Isaiah chapter 58 which basically speaks about the true meaning of fasting. God said on the mouth of Isaiah in chapter 58 verse 7, starting verse 6, "Is this not the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover them, and not hide yourself from your own flesh. Then your lights shall break forth like the morning, your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you." This is the true meaning of fasting. I'm going to go through quickly with you on some facts about the world that we live in today. And I hope this is not too boring for you, but I believe that it is good at least to have an idea of some facts that are happening around us today. In the year 1950, there were about 2.5 billion people. Today we have about, over 6.1 billion. In 2050, that should say, not 2005. This is just a typo. 2050, there should be around between 9 to 10.5 billion people in the world. The breakdowns, as you see, the ratios, Canada and U.S. only have about 5.2%. Of course, in the East, East Asia and Pacific are the largest numbers, around China and India. Of course, we have about more than a third, or if you count also South Asia, you'll have a half of the world's population only in that area. The economic breakdown, we have about 2.8 billion people living on less than $2 a day, which is just the minimum for meeting basic needs. 1.2 billion people, which are the bottom 20% that we saw on the first diagram, live on less than $1 a day, and this is what we call extreme poverty. And then there are 1.7 billion who are what we call the consumer class, and almost 50% live in developing world. Okay. Now here is where it starts to get a little bit interesting. The private consumption. By region, Canada and the U.S., the population, as we saw, is only 5.2%, but the consumption percentage is more than 31%. Western Europe is close, but not as much as North America. And we see in South Asia, where 22% of the world live, they only have 2%, and in Sub-Saharan Africa, only 1.2%. And here are just some facts about how we live today. New houses 38% bigger than in 2002 than in 1975, but fewer people per household on average. U.S. has more licensed cars than licensed drivers. On the measurement of private consumption, Sub-Saharan Africa is 20% worse off than two decades ago. U.S. has less than 5% of world's population, but uses 25% of world's fossil fuels. Global spending on advertising is more than $446 billion annually. 9 times more than 1950. 61% of U.S. credit card holders owed an average of $12,000 on their cards. So not only are we spending money that we have, but we are spending money that we do not have. More than 1 billion lack safe water, 2.2 billion lack adequate sanitation. Malaria kills over 1 million people a year. 90% are in Africa. 115 million children do not attend school. Infant mortality in 48 poorest countries averages 100 per 1,000. In affluent societies, 6 per 1,000. And I'd just like to share with you a quick story. You know how here when a new baby comes and they have balloons and they have cards and, you know, the family comes and if you happen to sneeze beside the baby, you know, they jump on you and they throw you out of the window. When we were in Egypt last year, we had a group of youth who went to like a really poor area in Egypt, and we went into one of those houses, and in these houses you have not only people living, but all the animals and everything else. The chickens are running, the cow is mooing, and everything is just happening all at once. And the lady is agonizing, baking and stuff. And then we went into this part. Of course, it's a mud house. And then right on the floor, they had a blanket. And on top of the blanket, they had like a net. They call it namuseya, and obviously namuseya to keep away the namus, right? So, and then I looked inside, and there was a pile of flies. And underneath these flies, I saw a baby crying. Somewhere inside. So this is with the namuseya on top of him, right? So imagine if there is no namuseya, they would have eaten him alive. Yani just the conditions are just yani unbearable. Here is something to note also on how people are spending their money. On cruises, ocean cruises, $14 billion annually. Ice cream, only in Europe, $11 billion. Pet food, $17 billion. Makeup, $18 billion. But you guys are not, you have natural beauty here. You are not guilty of this item. It's not a problem if you want to start using some makeup, but that wouldn't hurt you. That was a low blow. Man, that was bad, bad. But no. Just plain. I'm just trying to make sure that you're awake. So you don't doze off from me with all of these statistics and facts. So here's the big challenge. Safe water for all the people on the face of the earth would only cost $10 billion. Literacy to be abolished, $5 billion. Elimination of hunger and malnutrition, $19 billion. But you see where our resources are going. 1.2 billion are undernourished, underweight, and often hungry. 1.2 billion are overweight, overnourished, and need exercise. I've only seen a couple of people here, so don't, you know, it's not a big deal also here, but. Average family in Canada spends 11% of income on food, but a poor family in a city in a developing country will spend around 70% of income on food. They say food chases money and the poor are hungry. Two zones of suffering are India and the Sub-Saharan Africa. This is where most of the help is needed in today's world, actually. Okay. The greatest infectious disease catastrophe is in the history of the world. 40 million people live with AIDS, HIV also. 95% of AIDS-infected people live in countries where there is high malnutrition. 5 million more infected each year, 66% of new cases in Africa are women. Fastest growth rates are in Eastern Europe and in Central Asia now for HIV. It's not only in Africa, but in Asia also. More than 26 million people live with HIV, 30% of the infection rates in five African countries. 15% of children in 10 African countries have lost one or both parents to AIDS. By 2010, Africa will have 20 million AIDS orphans. In some countries, AIDS has claimed 20% of Africa's agricultural labor force. Here comes the hard question. Is there any hope? Christian witness in a world characterized by economic disparity, hunger, AIDS, hopelessness, and rage. Okay. It's good to notice also that in the past, maybe at least in the minds of many people in the world, they used to think that Christians meant of European descent or Caucasian. But actually by 2050, only 20% of Christians would be Caucasians. Typical Christians will have an African, Latin American, or Asian face. Christians in Africa in 1900 were about 10 million. Now they are over 360 million, as the latest statistic may say. Some voices from our time and also some personal action items that we need to think about. Somebody called Romeo Dallaire. If we believe that all humans are human, then how are we going to prove it? It can only be proven through our action. It starts with you. The main battlefield for good is not the open ground of the public arena, but the small clearing of each heart. It should start from inside. Here is a church leader in El Salvador. He said, "Tell North Americans that we do not want their charity so they can feel good about themselves. We want them to struggle with us for justice." I think this is a very strong saying. Personal action items. Here is where we need to discuss and think a little bit, what can we do? Dealing with the poor and the marginalized. What can we do to them? How can we help? At least in my opinion, there are three categories of people who are marginalized or left out. We can start with our own little community, our own churches. This is the first field that we need to work on. Number two, we can look at the society that we live in and seek those who are marginalized there and think about how we're going to deal with them. Third, or last but not least, we can think of all those people that we have been speaking about, the poor and the malnourished, how are we going to help them out? We should start with ourselves. And quite honestly, if every one of us thinks deeply inside of their heart, how many people have we isolated from our own communities and churches? How many people we made them feel uncomfortable or treated them differently? How many people, when they stepped out inside our churches, they didn't feel the care and the love of Christ, who loves all and accepts all, and they ended up never coming back? We are partially responsible. We should become like a letter U, not a letter O. O is enclosed. We like to hang out together after church. When we go out, only those that we know are with us, but all the others are excluded. But if we would think WWJD, the Lord would seek those who are outside the circle, those who do not fit in, those who did not belong to the norms. And these are the people that he wanted to hang out or chill with. These were his people. We need to think about that a little bit and have an action plan. Secondly, the church living in a postmodern society today faces a lot of challenges. And I'm sure you're aware what postmodernity is. It is living under no rules. Everyone makes up their own norms and rules as they go along. You cannot set a standard. You cannot say that this is the way that everyone has to live their lives. People would come up and say, "Well, this is good for you. This is what you believe. I will believe whatever I want." And living in a world with postmodern spirituality also is a big challenge, because people may seek spirituality in different ways. People are saying, "Well, I don't really need church to be a spiritual person." And even some people are going as far as saying, "I don't really need God to be a spiritual person," like Buddhist and some Hindu practices. They just practice their own yoga or anything like that, and they feel that this is the way that they can reach inner peace and spirituality. How are we going to deal with those people? How are we going to deal with people who conflict with us in their beliefs and faith? Many people that work in public areas have colleagues who are homosexual. And one person was telling me, you know, this guy is really sweet and kind, and he brings flowers every day to the office, you know, and but I don't know how to deal with him, right? He has a different set of morals and beliefs. How are we going to deal with those people? This is a big challenge that is coming up for our culture. Does the church exist in the middle of the darkness, or do we stay away altogether from darkness? The church will never compromise its stand and its beliefs, and the Bible will not be rewritten. It is only inspired by God once and handed over to our fathers, the apostles. We will not change our faith about different aspects. What about if you have a colleague who is living with her boyfriend or vice versa? How are we going to treat those people? Do we leave them out, or do we exist amongst them and try to shine or let the light so shine? And what are the consequences for existing in the midst of society with all of its challenges and difficulties? How will the church respond to that? I think this is a big challenge that is coming up, that we all have to think about it. Remember that the Lord said in his prayer to the Father in John 17, "Father, I do not pray that you may take them away from the world, but that you may keep them from the evil one." The church needs to exist in the midst of darkness. Let your light so shine. The light will not shine in a place that is lit, but it is most effective in darkness. Where there is darkness, how else will people know about God? But make sure you yourself are not affected by the darkness around you, because what good will it be? Make sure that your own salvation comes first. And if you take on the challenge, or you feel maybe that you are not ready for such a challenge, but if you feel that you want to be in the midst of the darkness, make sure that you are shielded and guided by the grace and the love of God. And remember always that your own spirituality and your own eternity is much more important than our comes before anyone else's. The third challenge would be, how are we going to respond to those who are marginalized in poor countries? And I see that you have already started a plan, action, by collecting some money. And maybe we need to think about it more and talk about it more. But our Christianity is not a selfish religion. And after receiving the grace of God, I cannot stop there. There has to be something else. I cannot say that my Christianity is my own and it's not to be shared. But our life, living under the grace of God, will continue to flourish as we think also of other people. Here is a saying by Emperor Julian. It's actually in the 4th century. He said, "The Christian faith has been specially advanced through the loving service rendered to strangers and through their care for the burial of the dead. It is a scandal that there is not a single Jew who is a beggar, and that the godless Galileans care not only for their own poor, but for ours as well, while those who belong to us look in vain for the help that we should render to them." Of course, Christianity in the early years was considered as still part of the Jewish, or the Galileans also may refer to the Christians. Find happiness in biblical values. Enjoy God's creation responsibly. Cultivate personal relationships with people near and far. Develop personal gifts and abilities. Delight in and serve the God of grace, love, and justice. I want to end here by a little mind twister, something to think about. It is entitled, "How do you spell the word life?" How do you spell the word life? And you may think it's a silly question. Life So what? Just the next slide after this one. Yeah. How do you spell the word life? This is the big question. But it is much more than just a special, just a regular spelling, L-I-F-E. Here is the first person, how one may think of his or her own life. Here's the first spelling. Next one. The first person will spell life as such. L-I-F-E. L-I-F-E. Therefore, this person is egocentric. Somebody who thinks about themselves. Lives their lives according to their own expectations. Doesn't care much about all those people who are around him or around her. This person will not be very much loved because they only care for themselves. They think that they are the center of the universe and everything else rotates around them. Everyone else is a mere number, but he is it. He's the man. He is the person who should be recognized in every occasion, and whenever he walks by, people say, "Hail to the King who is coming." L-I-F-E. I'm the most important one in the whole world. Next type of people spell life as such. They live a big lie. They don't care about the F. Their life is just one big lie. They pretend to be people that they are not. They walk in someone else's shoes. And they feel that, you know, they are here on the world to take advantage of it. But these people will soon find out that since they have not lived an honest and a true life, they will come to regret it at another stage of their life. The next set of people will spell the word life as such, a big if. I wish. And we hear this from many older people. They say, "I wish I had done this when I was younger. If I had done that, if I had studied in school, if I had served, if I have just worked a little bit harder, I would have been a much better person today, exceeded." And here comes the advantage of God giving us His grace today and living in it, taking advantage of it to help out and to serve others. So you do not come at a point later on in your life to spell life as such and say, "If I had done that when I was younger," you come to regret what could have happened. The last person spells life as such, lives life to its fullness, enjoys God's love and God's grace, God's giving and God's blessings, not only selfishly, not the I, not the lie, not the if, but lives life to its fullest. And remembers the words of our Lord Jesus who said, "I have come that they may have life, and that they may have it more abundantly." My beloved, let us live under God's grace, not be selfish, live our life to its fullest, share it with others, and glory be to God forever and ever. Amen.